Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the network for social justice, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today, my very special guests are Al Sanati with the War Victims Group and Ramiro Sandoval with Hermano Unidos Sin Fronteras. And they are here today to speak about their efforts on behalf of Iraq war refugees, dating all the way back to the Saddam Hussein regime through the more recent crop of refugees that have come here to San Diego's East County. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure being here.
Al, you've been involved in helping refugees dating all the way back to 1989. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved and what some of those early efforts were?
I came to the country as a refugee. I fled Iraq in 1975 because the government was after me because I was fighting for the right of our people. So I became target for the government, so I have no choice but to flee. Then when I came to the country, I fight for 3-4 years to be accepted as refugees, to enter the United States as refugees. Then what I faced from difficult situation that I faced by that time, I thought maybe it's the easy and the best way to help my people if I establish something that I can support all the refugees when they get to the country, because you know, difficulty, so many difficulty they faces, you know, the language, the cultures, the society, everything has changed. So that's why I became involved in the refugee situation.
Ramiro, how about you? How did you become involved in this process?
Well, I've been working with the Heartland Coalition for many years and various other nonprofits in the community in El Cajon. Heartland Coalition has had many programs in terms of training for minorities.
And full disclosure, Heartland is also the publisher of East County Magazine.
That's right. Yeah, but I'm not involved. This program is not involved at all with Heartland other than as a pass-through in terms of nonprofit status.
Right.
We don't have a big budget or anything like that, but we started working as a part of my work at the university with people who were refugees here but had medical inattention. They couldn't get medical services. And so in the community, I started working with various organizations. Part of my work is also in terms of developing healthcare programs. And I got involved with Al Sanati and some of the programs that they had here in the East County and worked very hard in terms of the refugees here in the United States from South America, from Africa, and other places in the world. And Hermanos Unidos was started in Los Angeles and by some founders who were here illegally but wanted to help and wanted to develop a relationship between the people that are here and the people that are in Mexico. In Mexico, particularly, they have programs to try to help the refugees that go back. They're entitled to certain benefits. And so we try to educate people on their rights and benefits if they go back to Mexico or their rights here in the United States in terms of healthcare. And so out of that, we develop more and more programs in terms of the need of people understand what their human rights are. Many people talk about human rights, but don't know the exact details of it or what is a human right.
Yeah.
In terms of human rights, we talk about the UN Declaration of Human Rights and the Declaration on Indigenous Peoples' Rights, which is 2007. And so we educate, we give, go to colleges and provide information about what is the rights. And so that developed into a stronger, what are the rights of all people in all the United States? And being a friend of Al, we started looking at how do we go about reducing the number of refugees that come here to the United States by providing them a country, their country, support over there, talking to the government officials as to the problems, why they have to flee, like security and safety, and how what can they do to prevent refugees from coming.
Right. So basically going to the root cause of what's forcing people to flee their homeland, such as the persecution that many different groups have faced in a place like Iraq.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, persecution or people calling your names. It's actually people coming to your door and killing your family.
Right. I mean, the most severe form of persecution, genocide.
Yeah, you know, and we talk about human rights in many contexts. Here in human rights, and my personal belief, and I think in many other countries, since I push healthcare, is the idea that people are entitled to healthcare.
Right.
And so that is my viewpoint. And so I try to express that. Here in the United States, it's not exactly that. We still have a system, unlike many European countries, where everybody benefits or everybody's entitled to the full benefits of the healthcare that the government provides. So that's been an issue. Now that got started because in 2006, I took a trip to Iraq, looked at the situation in Iraq, and recognized that many of the things that occur all over the world were happening 10 times worse in Iraq.
Yeah.
And so that brought my attention. I started working closely with the Immigration Refugee Assistance Center, and that's where we are now. We keep pushing the same goal. We know it's not a overnight goal. It's something that has to be pushed. We've been working on this for 20 years, and we're going to continue working on it.
Right. Now, Al, you were involved in a lawsuit against the Iraqi government seeking to provide reparations for Iraqi immigrants who were forced to flee and come to the United States or other places. Can you tell us about that?
After 2003, they set the constitution in Iraq, and it been approved by our government, our administration. Which means that every single person that got heard from the Iraqi regime before, from Saddam Hussein's regime, have to reimburse on all his losses. Now, in 1975, 225 villages from the Christian village being smashed from the ground, you know, because they said that they're helping the Kurdish rebel. So nobody mentioned anything about those villages and what's happening to the people. They flee, they kick them out from their homeland, they went to the big cities, some of them they die because they cut them from their roots, and they live in desperate situation. Then after 2003, they flee the country, some of them they are in Australia. The majority it's United States. There is almost million point two Iraqi Christian from Iraq live in the United States.
Right, and I believe the majority of those are here in San Diego County now. San Diego and Detroit, right, basically, are the two hubs.
Almost there is 80,000 to 85,000 Christian in East County.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. As well as, we should add, some Muslims and
the Kurd Muslims, mm-hmm. some Sunnis, some Yazidis, yeah. And I was involved, you know, to help all those people because of a human right. Mm-hmm. Not because of their ethnicity or the religious of, because they face all the persecution from the Iraqi government before.
Correct.
So that's why we came involved, and what we're trying to do to get benefit from all those people, because Iraq is one of the richest country in the world. So and everybody got his share. The Shia, they got their share. The Kurd, they got everything, whatever they want. The only people that they got hurt, it's those minority, what they call a minority, which is the root of the country. It's the Chaldean, Assyrian, Assyric, and the Yazidi, plus the Jew. So the Jew, they have somebody to protect them, you know, Israel protect them, but the Christian, they call us betrayer because, you know, we are tied to the Western. This is what's make us very easy target for all those groups, all those militia, and we facing genocide after genocide from 2003 until now. So what we did is we filed a lawsuit claim. Actually, it's not lawsuit until now.
And that was in 2012, the initial claim.
2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we submitted to United Nations, and we sent copy for Department of State and Department of Justice. We've been authorized by the people that are signing the claim with us to defend them, almost 15,000 families, not person, family.
So it languished at the United Nations. There was a lot of politics involved. Basically, nothing happened with it for years and years, I understand. And what's the latest on that? You mentioned now it's going to move forward as a lawsuit?
Now we're going to go to the higher level. We're going to go to the International Justice Court. And we try to file. I'm working with our lawyers that we're going to put something strong together and send it to the International Justice Court. And we will inform the State Department and Department of Justice and United Nations about our new step.
So in 2017, the two of you, I understand, traveled to Iraq?
We have an invitation from Prime Minister by that time, Vice President Nouri al-Maliki. We went as a group, and we met with all the government. We met with all the three presidency, all most of the parliament peoples, and all the groups of the politicians. You know, even the opposition group, we met with them.
And the purpose of this, we should add, was to secure the American Chaldean claims, those nearly million American citizens, and some were resident aliens, who are Chaldean Christians who fled Iraq. Correct?
Yes, okay. That's true.
So tell me what happened on that visit.
By that time, we met with all the, I told you that we met with all the official people over there, and all of them, they agree that we have some right. Not some right, but we have the whole right. But to put it on action, they said that they have some excuse that there is 3.5-4 million refugees. They are live in desperate situation. So they have to solve it. They're gonna start to, you know, solve our problem. And we agree. When we came back, we put our report and we sent it to the State Department. You know, we inform them what's happening with all those meetings. Then we tried to do the next step. It was to meet with the next government. That was been almost 6 months ago or 8 months ago. And we informed the State Department that we're going to go back and see what's going to happen. What's the next step? But, you know, because of the situation in Iraq, there is no government. And
right. We should say, for those who aren't as familiar with the situation, so they had an election in Iraq in May of 2018, last year. And it took until the fall before they named a prime minister. They've still been going through naming cabinet officials and things. So basically, it wasn't really a functional government. What's the situation now?
Actually, still over there, there is nothing that's happened until now. Because we don't know if really they're going to set the government, or really that the government's going to fail. Nobody knows. What's happening that there is the conflicts is to start between our administration and the Iraqi government. Who have more power on the ground? The Iranian side or the American side? And this is the conflicts. It's put the government in the middle. So we don't know what's going to happen. What's the next step?
Yeah.
We are waiting for our administration to clarify all those issues.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the attitudes have been of the people that you've dealt with in our government, both, I guess, in the Obama administration and now the Trump administration? How receptive has anybody there been to trying to get some help for these refugees?
Actually, last administration, it was almost, we come to conclusion with the ambassador at large, Ambassador Saberstein. And by that time, everybody was happy, because even he came from Washington and he visited us in San Diego. And he meet with so many groups from the Iraqi, not just the Christian, and some other groups, you know, and he met with the church. And we came to conclusion that there is something is going to happen as soon as possible. But because of the election, that the Democrat, they leave the offices, and we have to start all over again.
Yeah. Now, one thing that did happen under the Obama administration, I know they've had some criticism for being slow to come to the aid of these Christians, but there was finally a genocide declaration made by Kerry, John Kerry, mm-hmm. when he was the Secretary of State. Can you tell us what impact a genocide declaration has and who that protects?
Well, I think it legally, in international politics, genocide needs more special attention, particularly for the people that committed genocide. In this time, it was ISIS, or mm-hmm. ISIL, that we call them. ISIL has been a conglomerate of various ethnic groups, particularly
right.
one. Now, who is ISIS? Well, ISIS, a lot of people came from southern Russia, countries from all over. Some went from France, all over Europe.
Yeah.
People went to fight for ISIS. Now, that created a big problem for us in terms of the dispersion of the same ideology throughout Europe and the non-containment of the area until the Syrian war started, and then they started pushing back. Same thing with Iraq. They started pushing back from the other side mm-hmm. and with the backing of Iran and backing with the Kurds and backing with the Turkish people. I think ISIL ideology is still in place. But
yeah, we're hearing from someone who was just over there that there are still pockets of ISIS or ISIL around, and that there are still people being targeted, including Christians, in some parts of Iraq. It is still not safe.
Yes.
And women, rights of women also.
Yeah. It's been that same way. Now, obviously, once the new, you know, there was hope in the new government coming quickly, going like that. One of the things I heard from the people was that they wanted the, a collaboration agreement that was signed by our generals and Maliki back in 2008 or 2009, mm-hmm. the framework for, development. And that was that we would provide technical knowledge, provide back support by some of our own agencies and helping them set up their agencies like the FBI, the Treasury, to bring it up to what they call a technocracy.
Yeah.
And you notice that Sadar speaks a lot about he wants technocrats there because he wants people who are actually qualified for the position, have been trained in the position. And I don't, you know, and I think that's the correct way to do it, to get above the idea that so many people in government have to be Muslim, so many have to be Christian, or there's nobody Christian, but, you know, or Shia or whatever. The idea that that's how Iraq has been functioning. And so when you have a government that's made up by people that are indebted to their own religion, obviously they can't concede much besides one of their own ideology.
Yeah, and that's, we should clarify, by the way, that the genocide declaration affirmed that there had been genocide against the Chaldeans, the Assyrians, the other Christian groups in Iraq, as well as the Yazidis.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Tell us what's happening now with the Iraqi government. They've had all this turmoil, but they've had elections, they've got a new prime minister, they're getting a cabinet in place, and you're working on efforts to make sure that the constitution is inclusive of all Iraqis. Iraq now has a constitution, and there's been talk, I understand, of a conference or efforts to make it more inclusive, to put some teeth into this. Can you fast forward and tell us what the latest is on that?
Actually, the constitution, it's only on the papers. To enforce the constitution, it's very hard because there is so many conflicts going on the ground. The Shia, they are controlling the government, and they will never give up their right to the others. The Sunni, and when you talk to ISIS, when we say that ISIS mean all Sunni.
Meaning ISIS has its roots in an extremist form of the Sunni faith, but not all Sunnis subscribe to the ISIS philosophy, of course.
The surrounded country, they are supporting ISIS one way or the others. So it's the conflict is between the Shia and the Sunni, and everybody else has got stuck in the middle. So the Christian, it's they became, you know, a very dry wood for the war, and they have nothing to do with it. So there is no constitution unless the American, they try to do something about it.
So what can the Americans do about it?
They have to clarify. They have to clear everything. All the mistakes that they are made it, and all the mistakes, they make a big mistake on the ground. When they invade Iraq, they have to put the constitution by themselves and enforce it, not to hand Iraq a free gift for Iran. And now they are paying very, very heavy price, and they try to solve the problem. They cannot solve it.
How has President Trump's announcement that he is withdrawing troops from Syria and Iraq affected things on the ground, that affected your efforts to bring human rights to everyone over there?
He's affect everybody and everything in Iraq. Because, you know, after the goal for the president that they're gonna, you know, pull out the military from there, start so many voices inside Iraq. You know, in Iraq, there is almost 90 different of militia. All they are armed. All they've been protected by Iran. All they are against United States one way or the others. So they have to find some way to get rid of all those militia to clarify, you know, the view in Iraq.
We understand there's also a lot of corruption to deal with over there.
Yeah, for sure. The corruption, it's unbelievable. Almost $600 trillion been stolen from the Iraqi government, from the Iraqi people.
So the government itself is stealing the money from the people.
Government itself and everybody in Romero, you know. And when I asked the vice president, why all this corruption? He said, because we are all corrupt.
They insisted.
Yeah, they insisted. I asked, you know, the assistant prime minister, all the government, all the politicians, all they said, we all thief. They insisted, yeah.
Wow, so that's a tall order. How do you get over something that's such a systemic problem like that? Have you had outreach, I'm sure you have, to people within the Trump cabinet, the Trump administration, you know, the State Department, the Justice Department? And if so, what kind of reception are you getting there to the idea of the United States doing more to help the Iraqi Christians and the Iraqi refugees? Ramiro.
I'd like to speak a little bit about that because the war has really taken all the effort. Iraq has not been pacified, per se. It doesn't have clear control over its borders. People are crossing into it and kind of dictating the agenda of what the current government does. In terms of corruption and things like that, they were very much aware of it, and they wanted to say, we need to have technocracy in here. We need to have people that are actually qualified for their positions because they are easily manipulated by other people to do projects. One of the things that happened during when we were there was that we gave a lot of contracts for people to come in and build homes and things like that. Well, as soon as we left, they all left. And projects were half done. So they lost all that money. A lot of the contracts were forced on people. I mean, recently, I think President Trump said, oh, let's give Exxon and some of those companies some of your contracts. Yeah. You know, rather than let's pacify and set up a civic action or a special action force of technocrats to go in there and help them set up a modern day government with proper agencies, with proper policies.
Yeah, I was just going to ask if we could wave a magic wand and make you were president, what would you do? Or you were the person in our government that had, you know, the power to make something happen. What would you do to try to resolve these issues?
If I was the president, I would say, let's take a look at that framework for continuation that was signed by both of us. We took out our army, but now we're going to send in an army of technicians and technologists to be able to do this. As we promised and as we want to build a strong, in my situation, this would put many American people at the center of the conflict in terms of alleviating some of those things. Obviously, we can't go away from Iran. Because it's such a volatile situation.
Right.
It's right in the middle of all other political international politics.
And it's attempting to be a democracy in the Middle East when it's mostly autocracies over there.
That's right. And so it is very difficult for the people to say the people want it, whether they don't have a system to develop their country like they want to. And they need assistance from outside. Obviously, they have assistance to their oil. Their oil refineries were built. They don't have the income coming in. And some of the surrounding countries have promised to help rebuild it. Mm-hmm. But not a specific goal of just doing that. I mean, they help in different ways. We'll help you if you do this. We'll help you if you do that. Not with the expected outcome of having a better Iraq country that's better managed.
How do you get the government in Iraq that's so fractured and where the Muslim groups still largely control it to be inclusive to, you know, so that the human rights that you've talked about that are so important are ultimately respected for everyone, whatever their religion, whether they're men, women, whatever part of the country they come from? Mm-hmm. I mean, is that just a utopian fantasy that it could happen, or are there actual practical things that might help that along?
Well, I think that to say that the Iraqi people or the people in the Middle East don't have those abilities is, I think, is wrong. Iraq, before Saddam Hussein, in many countries were pretty much allowed different religions to exist, mm-hmm. Primarily, and there were that kind of conflict. The conflicts are exacerbated by the fact that international politics into the area. The idea that it's very resource rich, and many people have always wanted to get their hands on it, and they want to be the person to have the contracts. And these things happen all over the world, in Burma and all these other areas where resources are found, and then they get the indigenous people kicked out, and then they have refugees.
We're seeing it in Brazil now.
Same thing in Brazil, yeah. Same thing in Bolivia. It's the large countries coming in with specific needs of the country, resources primarily. And then leaving the country basically poor or at least fragmented.
Yeah. Al, what else would you like our listeners to know?
My opinion?
Yes.
Actually, we need a very strong effort from the United States administration because the only one that they can't change things in Iraq, nobody else. And to change things in Iraq, they have to solve the problem between them and Iran. And if they solve the problem between them and Iran, Iraq is going to be stable. Iraq is going to be one of the most beautiful country in the world. It was one of the most beautiful country. It's rich country. We lived together for hundreds of years. We didn't face this situation before until 2003. It's a start, you know, it's very clear and everybody know who behind it. So we need our government to be strong and to step ahead of time, you know, and to clear all the mess that they created from 2003 until now.
Has the federal shutdown had a direct impact on your efforts? Have you had communications that aren't occurring right now because of this situation?
I tried to get in touch with the State Department for the last 2-3 weeks, and I have no chance. So for sure it's affected our effort, because we're supposed to be on November in Iraq, and until now there is nothing. So we are waiting until see what's the situation, what's going to happen with the government.
Well, it's good to hear that you have hope despite everything that you've been through personally and that the Iraqi people have been through, that there is still hope on the horizon for restoring a democracy and human rights to an area that was, in fact, the cradle of civilization, where, in the case of the Chaldeans, the first Christians in the world came out of that area. I'm going to give each of you the final say here on what else you would like our listeners to know, or if there's any action that listeners can take.
We try to work hard with our community here and to put the pressure on our government in the United States, you know, because over there they can't do nothing, you know, the Christian in Iraq, they can't do nothing. Their power, it's on the church, but the church, it's like being controlled by, because of the fear that they have, they can't do nothing unless there is some power from outside to solve their problem. And this is the situation right now. We have to have people take action from all over the world, not just the United States and Australia and Europe and some other country, to put their effort to support the Christian. And, you know, in 2006, I met with some of politicians in France, and Kouchner, it was one of them, you know, Mr. Kouchner, and we got 500 visa, and they said we can get all the Christian to France, but the church, they refused it. They refused it because, you know, they said the central of the Christianity, it's in Iraq, so we cannot, you know, leave the country empty from the Christian. And personally, I support their goal, because there is a history of 2,000 years from Christianity, and there is a history of 5,000 years of culture.
And they don't want to see it obliterated if everyone leaves. I see the point. If everyone leaves,
exactly,
that history and that culture would be lost. And then on the other hand, for those who stayed, I know there was a debate about priests here, Chaldean priests, some of them being sent back to Iraq at a time when priests were being murdered and beheaded, some of them beheaded on the altar of a church over there. So it's a very dangerous situation and a very difficult decision, I'm sure, that the church leaders are facing as well.
Exactly.
Ramiro, what else would you like to add?
Specifically, I want to say that everyone should really go and learn about human rights. This was the human right documents was all the nations coming together and signing it and saying that they're going to work to achieve these goals. Some countries have a lot of money and they provide a lot of certain services. Here in the United States, we have the richest country in the world that can't provide health care to every one of its citizens.
Yeah.
We have to do that. And this is, I think, a big economic mistake. When an economic nation that values capitalism so much, that looks at the productivity of its people, that to have people that are non-productive, that are either taking taxes or, you know, you got to have people that are making taxes or providing taxes by workers and that are trained, that are well, that have received good health care, that are able to do the work. And they provide the taxes that we all live on. But we don't spend the right amount of money to keep them healthy. And so this is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's another whole topic, another whole show, I think, is reforming our healthcare system.
Yeah.
But certainly we've seen among the immigrants that have come over here from Iraq and the refugees, you know, many of them have become very productive citizens, contributing to our society, owning businesses, getting degrees. And then there are others who come over more recently who are still really struggling. You know, they didn't have as many resources, perhaps, as some of the ones who came before the wars. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real need, certainly, for what you're doing to both try to make things safer and more stable so that perhaps someday people can return to Iraq, and for those who choose to stay here, to fight, as Al is doing, for the reparations from the Iraqi government for those folks that, you know, that had to leave everything to come here for safety.
You know, we will keep fighting until we find some clear way to clarify all those mess that they've been put on it for the last 16, 17 years. And even before that, you know, by the time of the Iraqi regime, Saddam Hussein regimes, we didn't face this kind of action. But because of the war, and we know that what's happening, it was a mistake. Our government, they admitted that they make a mistake by invading Iraq. But now they have the responsibility. We say that you are responsible for whatever what's happening for the Christian, and you have to do something for them. And we will keep fighting until we get something done.
Very good. Well, we certainly wish you well in those efforts. And listeners, if you just tuned in, we have been speaking with Al Sanati with the War Victims Group and Ramiro Sandoval with Hermano Unido Sin Fronteras. Mm-hmm. Thank you both for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.